The future. A relentless, desperate wasteland ravaged by nuclear war. With the destruction of the internet and search engines such as Google, accurate information about the past is traded like currency. Two brave travelers are commissioned with the dangerous task of going back through time to gather as much information as they can to find out about the late 20th and early 21st centuries in hopes that a future society may rebuild what was lost and avoid the horror of a smoldering radioactive planet. But there is a catch. The travelers' journey back across eons of time is a one-way trip, leaving them stranded in the past.
Wait, what?
There's no way to communicate their findings to the future other than burying reinforced time capsules in the ground.
Are you serious?
In the hopes that one day recordings such as these will be unearthed to provide a glimpse of the world that once was.
All right.
This is the mission of the crispy coated robots, and it must succeed.
Hey, it's Jim.
And it's George of the Crispy Coated Robots. Welcome to episode number 52.
Man, that's a lot of episodes.
50, it is. It is a lot of episodes.
So what are we doing today for 52?
Today we're talking about Denzel Hayes Washington Jr., a son of a beautician, a mother, and a Pentecostal minister father. So he's one of the few remaining stars whose name alone can get that box office draw there.
You're talking about a first name alone, too. When you say Denzel,
there's
no other Denzel.
That's right.
And
that's
but then again, if there was another Denzel, he would still be the
he
only.
He would be the one. He'd be the Denzel.
He'd be the only Denzel still, yeah.
And in 2016, received the Cecil B. DeMille Lifetime Achievement Award.
Yeah.
And he's still making movies.
Still making movies.
If I ever receive that, I'm done. I don't need to make any more movies.
Still making high quality movies. Let's strike that too, because you know sometimes when stars, you know, later times.
Like who are you thinking?
I'm not gonna be negative about anybody. But sometimes you know you don't get the better roles in your later career. But Denzel is like you know like a Paul Newman type. He's gonna be getting great roles. Until-
yeah, I saw a recent movie with him and the Mr. Robot guy. I forget his name.
Yes, The Little Things.
Little Things,
yes.
Yeah. And still bringing it. Still bringing
it.
Yeah, I saw that the other day. So
we're doing the best Denzel roles?
Best Denzel roles. So that could be, you know, he's done television. He was Philip Chandler in St. Elsewhere back in the 80s.
Yes, yes.
So anything goes on this.
Anything goes.
PSA, you know, announcements or anything.
Really, for the Boys Club, because I know you did a lot of work with them.
So, okay. Is that
works?
Your number one?
No, I thought it was like roles in like film and stuff.
It can be anything.
Anything, okay.
Let's talk about the second category.
Okay.
So we're discussing items found on a playground for youngsters to play on.
Okay.
Okay. So yes, the modern designs and materials are safer, more compact, lighter. They've taken out the black top, replaced it with wood mulch and sand and rubber chips and all that. What we're talking about today is not all that. Is this playground quality sand, you know, up to government standards and all that? We're talking about the stuff that tried to kill us as youngsters.
Okay, there you
go. Okay, so this is the dangerous, the classic attractions that if not treated with the proper caution and respect, it would land you in the ER, Jim.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
And maybe even get a tetanus shot. You know, just not any of that wimpy stuff they have now. Everything in the playground was more dangerous. And it, you know, it kind of taught you, you know,
yes,
life is brutal and you need to pay attention. You need to kind of do what you're supposed to do.
Doesn't sound like fun. Doesn't sound like fun on a playground.
It was
the playground teaches you life is brutal.
Well, that's what it taught me.
Okay.
I spent a lot of time
really master some of those.
It came from, I guess, Germany in the late 1800s. They had swings and slides and things, climbing things. And often instructors led the children in organized play. Not here in America. It was just let those kids out of the van or the station wagon, run to all of that equipment, and just go nuts on it. So in 1906, there was an association formed, the Playground Association of America, because the government saw how playgrounds at schoolyards and city parks, it was kind of socializing the new immigrant population and kind of had a common ground there. So playgrounds, old school playground.
With not some this great, good historical facts.
That's though. Right. We haven't That's even good. Started the show. You've already learned something.
I've learned Jim. A lot. You know, I didn't know it was how to separate immigrants at the time.
No, it was to include them.
Oh, okay, I thought you said it's to separate. I thought, okay, you go by the monkey bars.
Yeah.
You stay over there.
Okay, yeah. All you Italian kids, you get the seesaws.
Wow.
No, it was to bring communities together and integrate and everything.
Okay, gotcha.
So a good thing, Jim.
It's a good thing. So we're going to start
with... No racist playgrounds today.
We're going to start with Denzel, right?
Yeah, let's do Denzel. What do you got for number five?
I have a movie that I guess some people might consider a number one. It might be your number one. It came out in 2001. It was the one that won him the Oscar. Training Day.
That actually is my number one.
As Alonzo Harris, you know, King Kong ain't got nothing on me. And I guess the reason it's my number five is basically this is a crime thriller. But basically, if you don't have a Denzel in this movie, this is a Saturday afternoon type thing. The movie is good. Denzel's performance is actually better than the script that it is. And the way he plays it, kind of grooming young Ethan Hawke and historical significance for the movie too. I was actually supposed to go to the premiere of this film in LA because I was going to Los Angeles for like my second time.
Oh, wow.
And 9/11 happens right before this thing is released. It comes out in October 5th. They were having the premieres and the buildup for it too. So this is kind of one of the first movies that kind of came out after that kind of like, I don't want to say got people's mind off things, but kind of like really got... it was a good diversion because you had Denzel playing anti-Denzel. He played.
Yeah, I was going to say we had never seen him as a villain before.
Yeah.
And he is ferocious in this.
Oh yeah, I mean that was the big deal. I think that's what helped him win the award too. And there's the theory too with winning the Oscar. It's always like you play the villain. The villain's more juicy. You're playing a bad person. The anti-hero sometimes will win you an award. And I think this performance is great. Like I said, I think it's actually better than
the
film.
That's why I only play villains. That's
yes,
why.
George. So
even on this show.
And I hate to steal your number one, so I know you got a lot of great facts on the
Training No, Day. Not at all. No, I would like to talk about the plot for the future.
Okay.
Okay. Since they haven't seen it, you had mentioned Ethan Hawke. He's a rookie cop.
Yes.
First day on the job as a narcotics officer in LA. And you have Denzel's character, what is his name? Alonzo Harris.
King Kong. King Kong. Ain't got nothing on me. Sorry. That's bad.
Yeah. Thanks for that. Yeah. But he's a dirty cop that's in trouble with, I think it was the Russian mob. He's got to get a bunch of money because he had killed somebody important in the mob or something. But anyway, he is just scrambling off the chain. But the charisma that he has that balances makes it so scary because just to know that there are people out there in the real world like that. So he really gives a very three-dimensional performance.
And the things he makes Ethan Hawke do because he is so persuasive and he is supposed to be the trainer of this young cop that, you know, he's like, oh no, don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah. He kind of entraps him.
Yes.
Well, not kind of, he entraps him so that he can say, hey, you know, if they run your blood, they're going to see that you took drugs a few hours ago and everything. So very clever. And that's the thing, part of it that is so menacing is this guy, he is smart and he knows what he's doing and how to reach his objectives and things. And, one of the more, for me, memorable, screen villains, and he is because he plays against type what we've seen him up to this point. But yeah, that's my number one. So that definitely makes our pod canister here.
Let's see if you're
for the future.
Let's see if your number five is my number one. And then wouldn't that be kind of cool?
Yeah, let's see. So my number five, do you want to do your playground thing?
No, I want to see if it's...
All right, so this is another detective. Okay. He's played a lot of detectives. He's kind of okay,
so it doesn't match.
Okay. The detective goat. Okay. But this is in Fallen, the movie Fallen.
Ah, yes.
So, and that opening line, I want to tell you about the time I almost died. Mm. As he's running through, it's Meteor Res, he's running through frantically the snow-covered woods. Like I said, he's played many detectives, but this one's my favorite because he has to outsmart a demon.
Mm.
Okay. So, and this demon's able to inhabit the bodies of his victims just by touching them. And so the whole movie is this seemingly hopeless game of cat and mouse until Detective Hobbs begins to understand the creature's limitation. And I like it because it's not so much a whodunit as much as how to win it, and at whatever the cost. If you've seen it, you know exactly what I mean by how he outsmarts this spiritual entity. But have you seen this movie?
I've seen bits and pieces. I saw the end of it yesterday.
Oh, really?
It was on TV, and I think we had talked, and you were like, oh, you know, I'm watching Fallen. So I said, you know, I thought you might watch the DVD, but you were watching TV. So I did see it. And I'm guessing when he said, forget you, that was something else from the TV edit at the end, John Goodman. It might have been some other words.
Yeah. Yeah, I forget what they were. No,
but I think
it does start with an F.
I saw it a long time ago, and I thought it was kind of interesting too, because you have Denzel in this kind of you don't say it's kind of supernatural, spiritual world too, kind of fighting. And really, if you don't bring weight to this role, it gets kind of laughable. I mean, think about some performances in movies that have supernatural or science fiction elements too.
Yeah, they
don't work.
They,
you know,
play it very straight. Sutherland is in it, Donald Sutherland.
Yeah, yeah.
You have John Goodman, who's excellent, mm-hmm. and James Gandolfini.
Gandolfini.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the Sopranos.
The Sopranos. And just the thing to, if you watch this movie, my favorite thing is to watch the demon transfer into different people, just as he's walking down a New York City street, touching people, because they instantly take on these actors who they're not all big name actors, mm-hmm. maybe even extras, take on this personality of this maniacal demon that just is mocking Hobbs all the way. And they all sing,
time is on my side. It changes your aspect of the Rolling Stones song. Yes.
Yeah. And of course they close the movie with Sympathy for the Devil, the actual Stone track, which I was like, I really appreciate that, you know. But Detective John Hobbs
in
Fallen.
Okay, there we go. So on to Playground stuff. I'm excited about this. My number five Playground, and the thing is something called a merry-go-round. And this thing wasn't like, you know, you think about a carnival merry-go-round with the nice horses or the carousel. No, this is a big giant metal flat circle with handles on it that you can possibly, like you said, George, can really injure yourself if you're spinning around, or if you're not holding on, or if you're laying down. You could fly off this thing.
This is my number four.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, the objective was to get the thing spinning so fast that kids are flung off.
Like a death wheel, if you want to call it something else.
Right. And whoever is left is the winner.
It does everything negative. It makes you dizzy. It could possibly get
negative.
It can make you seriously injured.
Yes.
Most of them are metal. I don't know if they're plastic now.
We're not talking about what they are now. We're talking about back in my day.
But heavy metal circle, heavy metal poles to grab onto.
Yeah.
And you can easily hit yourself, hit your head or something on both.
Oh, yeah. Solid metal. And it's the fastest as you can get it to go. It actually came, immigrants, again with the immigrant thing, with Europe introduced their fondness to the carousel knockoff in Brooklyn in the 1800s. So this was a thing that they kind of brought over
Europe. We could do a carousel, just no horses, no lights, no fun music.
Yeah, you don't want
no twirl, no
just kids being flung off at
no
high rates.
No kind of speed. Like a nice speed going around and seeing the sights. No,
you were in luck if there was like a big kid, like a preteen at the playground that day. that could really get this thing going. Yeah. That was a treat.
So there you go. That's my number five.
Yeah, my number four. So again, we have a match.
We have a match. Now let's see if my number, if your number five is on my list, this could be interesting. Because I think, you know, with playground equipment, it possibly could be.
I think we're going to have a lot of matches on this category. So this ranks lower on my list because you have to have a partner for it to work.
Okay.
And we're talking about the seesaw or the teeter-totter or teeter-board.
Actually did not make my list.
Okay.
Honorable mention, I guess.
Okay. Are you just now adding it to
the
honorable?
Yes, just now adding it.
I don't think that's how you get to do honorable mention. I think that's cheating.
Go ahead with your facts.
Doesn't matter. Okay. But supposedly originated from France in the 1500s. Okay. It's basically two or more kids on the, you know, both ends of a long, narrow wooden board, usually with splinters and chip, you know, painted, you know, all chipped up and everything, but propped up on a single pivot point. One side goes up, the other goes down. And again, you have to have somebody.
Yeah, equal weight distribution.
Well, and you know, hopefully it's a kid that you're friends with, because otherwise they get you up at the very top. And I speak from experience on this.
I won't let you down.
And either won't let you down or just disengage, which brings you crashing down, you know, and you know, breaking your tailbone. Yeah. But the seesaw.
There you go. That is your number five. And we are now moving on to my number four movie for Denzel. And I say movie because it was a film from 1992, made a big impact. Malcolm X.
Oh, yeah.
The biopic of Malcolm X, directed by Spike Lee. Originally supposed to be directed by Norman Jewison, but I don't know
if you're... Oh, wow.
There was a bunch of hubbub about, you know, Spike Lee said this needs to be directed by a black director and... Jewison.
That's really interesting. He actually directed
him in The Hurricane. So he would go on to work together, and we worked together, I think, previously too, in another one that's on my list, which I won't give away at this point. But Malcolm X, for the summer of 92, because it came out in November, great marketing campaign, people wearing X's and X hats and stuff like that to kind of get the word out.
I thought that was for the X-Men.
No, you're wrong. you know, and this is like, this is a tough role to play because, you know, you have so many people, a man that really kind of was, influenced a lot of people, was very important in American history. And you have Denzel doing an amazing job playing him. You know, we see his transformation.
All that zoot suit stuff.
Yeah. We see his transformation in the beginning, to the middle, and to the end, where he goes to, I forget where he goes to. He goes to Mecca or he goes someplace, and he realizes a different way of thinking too. So he was nominated for Best Actor. A lot of people thought he should have won that year, but they thought that Al Pacino was given a for Scent of a Woman because it was kind of like... Not really based upon Scent of a Woman, but his back catalog.
Yeah, the Academy will go, oh my gosh, we didn't give John Wayne an Academy Award.
Let's give it. Let's have a win for The Shootist.
Let's give it to him. Yeah, they tend to do that. But yeah, this actually is on my honorable mention. No, you not just on my
added it right now.
Yeah, I can show you. I can prove. You come around to this side of the table, I'll show you. It's a good choice. I will talk about. Here in a moment, I do have a biopic because he's done a lot of biopics.
Oh yeah,
and I didn't want to just I could have stuffed my whole list with just biopics of things that he's done.
Yeah, he's so good at doing.
But I wanted the future to kind of see different types of roles that he has been in. But yeah, this is definitely a solid choice. Malcolm X-Men. Malcolm X.
He said that I didn't, folks. So that's my number four is Malcolm X from 1992.
Good one.
What's your number four?
So, I'd like his character in this movie. The movie's admittedly kind of dumb.
Wait, are you doing Virtuosity?
No.
Okay.
But
told me we talked about this for like extended period of time.
Well, I do like Virtuosity is a guilty pleasure with Russell Crowe. The first movie I remember seeing Russell Crowe in.
Is this Ricochet?
No.
Okay.
I'm just going to say it's Book of Eli.
Okay. Okay, that was pretty well received.
In 2010, it's basically, Jim, it's Mad Max without a car. So with a little, you know, mix of Clint Eastwood detachment from some of those Western things. The premise is 30 years after a nuclear event, okay, turns the world into a wasteland. That sounds familiar.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. But Eli, Denzel Washington's character, marches across this ruined landscape, and he's got this kind of secret self-inflicted mission. You really don't know what it is, but he keeps saying that he's got something that he's got to do. But then the movie really heats up when Gary Oldman, who plays the villain in this, is something of a self-appointed baron, kind of clashes with him. And again, the ending is a little off. It almost feels like a different movie altogether, but I like this character that he plays in this, the loner outsider, doesn't want to mess with anybody, really, again, straight out of Mad Max for me.
Yeah.
That kind of, I don't want to influence or fix anything. I'm just trying to make it through. Don't want to mess with anything. I own the movie. When it comes on TBS, I watch the movie,
yeah,
you know, no matter where it is in the thing. So I'm just captivated by, and there is a little gag at the end that you're like, the first time you watch it, it's like, oh my gosh, I got to watch it again, you know?
Yeah.
And do we want to say what that is or just leave it?
It's up to you. Yeah. I haven't seen it. So
are you kidding?
I haven't seen the Book of Eli. I'm sorry.
Okay.
That's the one I missed on this research. I've watched every Denzel movie for this show.
Okay.
The
fact that you just said, I haven't seen the Book of Eli. I didn't know if you were having fun with that or not. That's part of the gag. Okay. That's part of the gag at the end.
Okay. No, I really haven't seen it. So if you wanted to reveal the gag,
For your benefit, okay. I am not going to say what it is, because it is one of those like Sixth Sense endings where it's like, oh my gosh, Bruce Willis was dead the whole time. Spoiler. It's that kind of an ending.
It really was like book and some like little kids reading it. It was a Book of Eli.
No, it's okay. He's transporting a book across the wasteland that was the United States. Trying to get to the West Coast. So that is a
that's real the thing. Plot. Okay. Yeah,
it's
okay.
Not a dream or anything like that. But there is a shocker at the end that it's like, oh my gosh, I need to go back and watch every single frame.
Is it like Planet of the Apes type shocker?
It is. He was on a Planet of Apes the whole time and didn't know
Does
it.
Does he say, you had to do it, didn't you?
Yeah.
You had to blow it up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wow, okay. I got to watch it
so now. So now you know. But that's my number four, the Book of Eli.
All right, my number four playground equipment is something called the Geodome. I know you probably don't know what is a Geodome, but if you've seen it on every playground.
I read Buckminster Fuller's book about geodesic domes, so yeah.
Well, I didn't know it was a Geodome. I thought it was just that dome that was like made of a bunch of rods.
It's the only structure that gets stronger the bigger it gets, just so you know.
Anyway, so the Geodome is a kind of like this... it's just kind of like a circular dome and has like, you can climb upon it. You can get on top of the geodome. You can put yourself in the geodome and play like that's your house and do different things with it. But I always thought it was interesting. It was almost like the monkey bars everywhere. You know, you could just grab it and climb up. You can do pull-ups on it. You can climb with your friends and sit on top of the geodome. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It came later. It is a version, of the monkey bars or jungle gym, if you will. So yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. It's the difference with this is the monkey bars are very compact. But this, because it is a dome, it's spread out more. So yeah, you can, there's a lot of different ways to play on it. So
not much more to say, just geodome.
Oh, I think
not biodome.
I think we can talk like for another. Yeah, not the Pauly Shore.
Yeah,
I like how we both go to Pauly Shore for biodome.
All right, so there you go.
Says
so
a lot about us.
What is your number four playground equipment?
Merry-go-round.
Oh yeah,
we already talked about that.
Okay, so let's move back to Denzel and do our number threes, and then we'll take a little break if you don't mind. Mine is Denzel Washington, Russell Crowe together, but not 1995's Virtuosity. American Gangster from 2007.
Oh, yes, yes, okay.
Where, of course, Denzel plays Frank Lucas, the famous gangster. It's fictionally based upon his life as, you know, George told you about a lot of the many biopics he's done. This was the guy who smuggled heroin into the United States on American service planes returning from the Vietnam War. That was one of the things he did. But also had a big crime career, and he was tailed by Richie Roberts, played by Russell Crowe in the film. Really well done. He has that menacing thing that Denzel can bring to a role, almost but more subdued, of course, than Training Day. This is a calm gangster guy who's
which is scarier in a lot of ways.
Yes, yeah. In the way he deals with some of his associates around him. You know,
yeah.
Basically your friend one second, and the next day you could be killed. And that's kind of like that whole menace from that came from The Godfather on. And I think he really pulled this off well. Film nominated for 21 awards, including two Oscar nominations. So, I mean, the really good film, really good portrayal, and I just liked it because it's like later Denzel. You know, it's like 2007, but still just commanding. And I do like him and Crowe together, even though Virtuosity was a crazy film. But I think they played well off each other, and great supporting cast in here, too. And
this is actually the sequel to Virtuosity.
Yes.
I think.
They go to a... anyway. No, but American Gangster, his portrayal of Frank Lucas is my number three.
Yeah, that's a solid choice. And like I said, for me, there's so many biopics or biopics, as we discussed in episode 40...
One of those episodes.
What was it? We have a...
Okay. He's going to
look it up. I'm going to look it up. Settle down.
Okay. Might be going to intermission early, folks. Okay. He's still looking, folks.
44.
Okay.
Episode 44. I thought it was in the 40s.
Okay.
So I wanted to we talked about Malcolm X. I had considered his role as activist Stephen Biko in Cry Freedom.
Yes, yes.
Or even Herman Boone in Remember the Titans.
Yes.
But I decided on Reuben Carter, The Hurricane.
The Hurricane.
1999.
Yes.
And partly because there's a Bob Dylan song about
this is the story of a hurricane.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry, folks. I should not have mentioned that. It triggered Jim to do that. But the film, as we talked about, directed by Norman Jewison.
This is the story of a hurricane. Okay.
But it's based on the true story of a boxer that was wrongly imprisoned for murder, and you know, about the people who aided in his fight to prove his innocence. He was nominated for Best Actor in this one too.
Yeah, man.
But he lost to Kevin Spacey for American Beauty that year.
Oh wow, that's probably another ripoff.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Kevin Spacey was good. But still,
he was good in that role.
Yeah,
I felt. But the Reuben
from Norman Jewison.
I'm just for the rest of the episode. I'm just going to say that guy.
Reuben Carter. It was a good portrayal, and you know he was aided by like a whole bunch of Canadians that it's an interesting story how it all plays out and how he's set up. And if you don't want to watch the movie, just listen to the 7-minute Bob Dylan song. It tells the entire story except for the Canada part. He left that out. The Canadians helped him out. It'd be like another verse of that. But anyway, let's move on to our instrumental before another Bob Dylan.
Our instrumental.
Instrumental. Our intermission. Whew.
It might be an instrumental.
It might be an instrumental. Let's see.
All right, what do we got?
What's he today? Man, we are down to the nitty gritty on these
that could be good
instrumentals. Here we go. It is a Frogger video game. Back in the day. Okay, cool. I'm excited about this. Let's give it. Let's play a little round of Frogger. Thank you. And we're back from Frogger.
Oh, so unfortunate. Jumped off that log a little too early.
Just a little too early, but hey, you know, it's okay. We're here. We're moving on now to our number three for playground equipment. And George, I know you're excited to get yours on there. So what is your number three?
All right. So it is the Monkey Bars or Jungle Gym. Okay.
Okay.
So very similar to what we were talking about a moment ago with the Geodome. First Monkey Bars actually invented by a lawyer in 1920, Sebastian Hinton from Chicago. Kids just love to climb and swing on the structure like monkeys swinging through trees. So
this
they
is my number two.
Monkey. Oh, okay. There, sorry. Great. Again, the original, very slippery metal, very tall, no safe ground to cover your cushion if you fall. It was treacherous. But again, it was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. And then, like you said, they, I always used to remember, like, they had this competition that was on ABC called the Superstars. They don't do it anymore, but it was basically on the off season of football. So they get like all these athletes from football, baseball, and they'd all compete against each other. And they'd always have to do this obstacle course at the end. And they always had the monkey bars in there, and then they had to touch like three or four bars, and they had water underneath it.
Oh,
and so people would miss it and, you know, fall.
Very cool. Very cool.
So monkey bars is
okay. So that definitely makes the canister for the future. Then it's
all right. My number three. It's probably on your list.
Okay.
Swing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is this your number one?
It is my number two.
Oh, wow. So my number two was your number three.
I'm not.
And my number three is your number two. Wow. Very nice.
Whatever.
So.
I don't know.
I'm gonna
go back and listen to the show.
On the playground, the swing is industrial. I mean, it's like you can really, I mean, cause you did the
it's,
whole,
it's not a playground without a swing.
I did the homemade stuff at home, and you kind of have the anchors and stuff. And some kid gets on your swing set at home for your kids and starts swinging crazy. The whole thing starts rocking, right? On the swing on a playground, you're not going anywhere. This thing is industrial. It's usually sometimes it's an actual swing. Sometimes it's a chain.
Yeah.
You know, where
those are the best.
Yeah. So you're on a chain seat, but you can have some bozo behind you either pushing you really far or you going up really high up. And you can really injure yourself if you try to jump off from a too high of a height.
Oh, that's the thing. If you have the nerve or did have the nerve, you probably can't do it now, but you could build up some momentum and let go at the apex of your ascent, and you could get some good air. You launch pretty good distance, and hopefully the ground that you land on is soft enough to, you know, avoid fracturing your shins. But the wooden swing set goes far back as 1450 in ancient Greece, so it's been around. It's a very simple concept, just the wooden plank with holes. Now, growing up, we didn't have as many wooden ones as we had that vulcanized rubber black, looked like a tire.
Yeah.
Almost.
Oh, yeah, like a tire. You know,
and I've learned over the years that that was to prevent vandalism.
Oh, really?
Because you couldn't really mark that up like you could a piece of wood. But what I like about swings is any age can enjoy, you know, whether it's an infant or a toddler to some wild lost boy or girl who is, you know, training to be a future stuntman or stuntwoman, you know, you can enjoy a swing. Or you can just sit there. Say you're tired of running around the park. I don't want to sit on a bench. I'll just kind of hover here on a swing for a bit. But yeah, that is my number two.
All right. So we're rolling ahead. We only have one more pretty much to go on the playground equipment, but two more Denzel Washington roles. And my number two is he's a supporting role, and it's his first kind of major drama film that he did.
I think this is going to be one.
And it's Norman Jewison again, who directs the film from 1984. It's a soldier story, and it's pretty much a what you say, an ensemble cast with even some, you know, you have David Alan Grier, known for comedies, playing a very serious role in here. You have the great Adolf Caesar as the Sergeant Waters, who's a amazing kind of, what's the word? He compromises to the man kind of thing. And then you have all black kind of platoon here, and you have a murder mystery along with the great Howard Rollins kind of leading the investigation into it. But Denzel is one of the privates, Private Peterson here. And we get to see the power of Denzel, the Denzel to be from A Soldier's Story. We see him in many scenes, many seriously dramatic scenes, because of the overreach of Adolf Caesar, who kind of really takes it hard on his own troop there. So, but the film is just well done. If you haven't seen it, I think this could even be a movie lost in time, which I've seen recently. It started out as a play. It's back now playing Broadway as a play. It was, yes. Back at David Alan Greer playing in it. So very well done, movie. And I think it kind of really showed people what Denzel that was to be, from this 1984 film. We saw him on St. Elsewhere do dramatic stuff, yeah. But nothing like this. Nothing like this.
So there are so many parallels to what you said that I thought you were going to say a different movie. So my number two
I need to mention real quick. This is the first time he worked with Norman Jewison. So he wanted to, that's why he was brought up for Malcolm X, because of the great working relationship here.
Yeah, and they do well together.
When that didn't work out, he did The Hurricane. So I just wanted to bring that all in one big giant tiny circle bow type thing. So
and we'll have that for the Jewish and
our best Norman Jewison films, which you know, it's a lot of good ones.
Honestly, we could do a show off.
Yeah, Fiddler on the Roof.
But this is the first role I ever saw him in, and I was mesmerized. But the parallels, he is a soldier.
Yeah,
he is a supporting cast member. He's arguably not the.
I think this lead. Is my honorable mention. Okay. Yeah.
And it is just a brilliant performance. I'm talking about, he's also a private. It's Private Tripp in the movie Glory, 1989, yes. Another 80s movie where he plays a soldier. The difference being is this story is about the formation of the first formal unit of the Union Army during the Civil War, made up of totally African-American enlisted men. The movie Glory stars Matthew Broderick as Robert Shaw, the Union colonel. Okay. He was actually a real person. Okay. And the screenplay is based on books written by Colonel Shaw's personal letters. Okay. And the film just depicts these soldiers headed into a major battle in South Carolina. And, you know, their real life courage changed public perception in the United States by accepting thousands of black men for combat, to the point that President Abraham Lincoln credited them with helping turn the tide of the war. But the performance in this thing is spellbinding. I remember sitting in the theater in 89 and thinking, this guy is a star. I didn't even know his name.
Yeah, this one scene in particular, if you haven't seen the film too, I think with the
brutal, literally and figuratively, and that tear coming out of his eye, you know, going down his cheek. I don't know that I would have cast Matthew Broderick in the role that he plays in, but Private Tripp, Denzel as Private Tripp is.
Well, I think
amazing. Watch the movie just for his performance.
Well, I think the casting of Matthew Broderick was supposed to be as the actual character, the actual historical character, was kind of in something over his head. You know, he wasn't prepared to lead soldiers into battle, and he was kind of a lesser type officer. So I think they tried to get Matthew Broderick who we know is not the strongest or an action hero to kind of be that person. That's what
he does a good job. I'm not knocking his acting in this, but every moment on the screen that Denzel is there performing is just a treat. It's really, really good.
There you go.
Heartbreaking at the same time, the whole thing. So
we're on to our number one for Playground. I think we both have the same number one.
I hope so.
So are you ready to say it at the count of three? Three, two, one.
Slides. Slide. Yes. Slides used to be deliciously dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And now they're more dangerous. No, I'm joking.
No, now they're all covered.
They're all covered with this kind of
big, I mean, you could fall off of a slide back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But now there's a tunnel almost. Like tunnels.
Yeah, so you can't fall out.
Yeah. You're in there somewhere. You can get stuck up in there, or you can stop yourself in the middle of the tunnel, but, you know.
Sounds like have you done this as an adult?
No. I've tried to climb up it the opposite way.
Oh, okay.
And climbing up the slide, too, going up there, you know.
Yeah, so in the old days, climbing up these sandy metal cross-track steps, you could really get going fast. But if it was in the summer, the slide could be really hot, like a stovetop, you know, just waiting to give you first degree burns all the way. And it always smelled bad, always smelled like pee, you know. At least the slide in Humble, Texas, you know, the city park.
The famous pee slide in Humble, Texas. Where you can go and smell the pee.
Nervous children with leaky diapers or what. But, integral part of playgrounds. Almost every playground or schoolyard had this colossal slide. But it was made by an English engineer, Charles Wicksteed, in 1922. It's hard for me to imagine a world where there weren't slides. But they came on the scene in 1922, and, you know, very steep and hazardous. Again, there were no protective side rails. So, and it wasn't uncommon to, like, accidentally flip over on your way down. Say the heel of your tennis shoe sneaker accidentally caught, you know, the thing. You would go skidding like a car on ice down the slide. And if you were really brave, you would go down on your stomach. Go down. But a lot of times it would just launch you off the end of, you know, I remember seeing kids with, I guess, rice paper or something so they could go faster. They would sit on the rice paper and zip down. It's a rush, man.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, slides, there's nothing beats a slide. I mean, the payoff of climbing up, I mean, going, you know, climbing up and the payoff of going down so quickly, it's, I mean, look, why would there be like amazing water slides? It's all based upon the original, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, hey, we can make this go faster with water. Hey, let's do a whole park of these water slides.
True. That is true. I hadn't considered that. So let's look at the, well, I guess we've got one more Denzel. I'm ready to close the gates on this.
My number one is, I don't know if you want to go first, because my number one, I think, is somewhat surprising. I don't think that it would be your number one.
Well, my number one is going to be a 2001 American crime thriller film called Training Day.
Oh, that's right. We talked about it already. All right. So you ready for my number one?
I guess.
It is probably, I don't know if you're going to like this.
It sounds very, there's an apologetic tone coming.
No. This is a great film. It's from 2012. Denzel nominated for a Academy Award for it. I think it's his most human performance and his most heartbreaking performance in ways. It's the movie Flight. And Flight was directed by Robert Zemeckis. This was his first R-rated film.
This is on my honorable mention, by
since
the way.
Used Cars. So go back to our Movies the Time for God episode, and you'll find out it's talking about used cars. But this is the movie is about an alcoholic airline pilot who miraculously crash lands his plane after the mechanical failure. But
upside down.
Saving nearly everybody aboard. This is the anti-Sully. I mean, it's upside down. And it is the film loosely inspired by the plane crash of Alaska Airlines Flight 261. But the human side of this thing is Denzel is a guy who's struggling with addiction. He's
Whip Whitaker.
And the movie just... I think it's his most, even though we see the biopics and him playing these characters, that's somebody else. I think this is his most honest kind of
he to the ground. He is a broken man, this character, for sure.
And it's captivating. I mean, watching this, when I first saw this, I saw the preview, it's Upside Down Flight, this is one of these films. But no, this is real human stuff, and he has to go, and I think the thing that this reunites him with John Goodman.
Yes.
And John Goodman is his dealer of sorts.
Yeah.
And there's a scene at the end where he has to testify, but he can't, he gives in to the hotel bar where they're keeping him in, and they don't. They take all the liquor out of this thing, but the door next door is cracked open. So he goes to the mini bar in the next room that's open in the hotel. And it's just one of those scenes where he looks at all those things. But he calls John Goodman to come shoot him up with heroin to help him pass the alcohol test. This is just a crazy film. But I think the way he plays it, I think there's so many great films, and I know people are going to really disagree with me, like Flight number one, but for what he did in this movie, watch it again and you'll see how good it is.
It's another movie where he plays against type.
Yes.
And does very well. So yeah, this is on my honorable mention.
Almost,
Whip Whitaker.
Almost less cartoonish than the Training Day against type. This is like a real grounded kind of person really struggling.
There's a real tragedy here. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and my honorable mentions include his comic turn with George Siegel in Carbon Copy.
Oh, I can't believe it.
Because, you know, it's the film is based upon, you know, him having an affair with George Siegel's character having an affair with a maid and Denzel being his son. And then once Denzel, like, comedies of early 80s, Denzel becomes his son and his life gets flipped up. Once he claims him as his son, his life gets flipped upside down and he loses everything because of the racist nature of the white world.
I don't know. It was good when it came out. Culturally, I don't think it would work today for that movie because, you know.
The earnestness and the character that Denzel plays is really well done. Glory is on there too. His turn in the Taking of the Pelham 1-2-3, which I did never want to see a remake of this film because
he's Walter Matthau.
Yeah, but Walter Matthau is. I mean, people can say that Denzel is Denzel every movie, but Walter Matthau was really Walter Matthau every movie. But he plays it really. Well, and I think it was well done. I was really against the remake because I thought the first one was perfect. And Crimson Tide.
Yeah, oh, gosh. Crimson Hunter on Crimson Tide. That's on my honorable mention. Anybody that can go toe-to-toe with Gene Hackman.
Out-scream Gene Hackman.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know,
yeah.
No, in those later films, Gene Hackman was just yelling at people.
Which I love. It's Gene Hackman. Do whatever you want.
Ah! What are you trying to tell me, soldier? Okay, I've never done Hackman before, so please excuse that.
It wouldn't have mattered. I've also got Joe Miller from Philadelphia, where he is defending Tom Hanks, and or not defending, but trying to get Tom Hanks settlement. Also, Devil in a Blue Dress, he plays Easy Rollins.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a kind of a modern noir set in New Orleans.
But it's kind of funny. You could pretty much go down his entire offenses. I mean, you can go down to his entire catalog. Everything is good.
Yeah. So I know we've made dozens of people mad.
With our top five, yeah.
Why didn't you say this? You know. And, of course, again, Philip Chandler on St. Elsewhere, you know, the work that he did back in the 80s on that. You know?
Yeah.
It's not on my list because we all know that was only a dream. You know, so listen to our worst series finales episode to get more on that.
But I think we have a respectable list. So please give us some slack on
that. We only have one crossover, and that's Training Day.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah. So let's go. Training Day, Fallen, Malcolm X, Book of Eli, American Gangster, The Hurricane, A Soldier Story, Glory, and Flight.
I will give you Glory over Soldier Story only because he had a bigger role. He won the Oscar for Glory too, even though Soldier Story, I think people need to see. So
yeah, I think check out all of these things. You know, I could go with any of these, honestly.
So we have the biopics. We have Malcolm X, we have Hurricane, and we have American Gangster. What do you think is the strongest biopic of those three?
Oh, man, I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know. I know I whine about it every episode, but this was a hard list for
me. I think for cultural significance and even for what he brought to it and for what the person meant to people.
Book of Eli?
I think you have to go with Malcolm X. Okay. That's just me, though. So Training Day, Malcolm X, Glory, and the rest is kind of if we did Book of Eli and Flight.
I could do that.
I could do that, too. Because yeah.
I like seeing him so broken in Flight.
And so, playing a real person. You know, I'm not saying the other people aren't real people. There's other people.
And I love that you're going to go with Book of Eli, Unseen.
Unseen, yes. I'm taking your
word
for
it. For
those
of you that have seen the movie, know what I'm talking about.
I'm taking your word for it. So there's some sort of blind reference there, Ho.
There is a blind reference
okay,
there.
Okay. Now that's all coming together. Now it's spoiled for me.
You don't even know.
So it looks like we're into
How can you make a seriously, how can you make a Denzel Washington list. If you haven't seen all of the movies.
Have you seen American Gangster?
Yes.
Have you seen Hurricane?
Yes. It's on my list. Yes.
Have you seen Soldier Story?
Yes.
Have you seen Fallen?
Yes.
Have you seen Flight?
Yes.
Okay. I haven't seen Book of Eli. I apologize. Okay. I you know.
I have it.
Can't watch them all.
Do you want me? I'll go get the DVD.
Have you seen?
I've got it in the other part of the studio.
Have you seen Fences?
Yes.
Jeez.
Yeah, he's kind of at odds with his son.
You seen The Great Debaters?
I have not seen that.
Okay, so yes, got one.
Okay, you got me.
All right, so let's finish.
I'm sorry I opened that door there. Okay, moving on to playground equipment. We've got merry-go-round that's in, jungle gym, swing, slides. For your geodome, I mean, jungle gym?
It's kind of jungle gym. I'll give you the seesaw just by default.
All right.
So I'm not, you know, it's kind of like, you know. All right.
You don't like
no
seesaws?
No contest.
Did you have a seesaw incident?
Seesaw accident, yeah.
You know, you put your trust in
the other person.
The person sitting across from you.
Yeah. We actually made
it. Kind of like this,
yeah.
How we're sitting across from each other.
We actually...
when you're down, Jim, I lift you up.
It should be on my list because we actually went to Dominican Republic with our church.
That is like the seesaw capital of the world.
Well, no, we made a seesaw for the kids to enjoy.
Scary. You're not much of a carpenter.
Yeah, I'm not much of a carpenter, but apparently I heard...
So many lives were lost.
I heard it actually stood for a couple...
Of minutes?
Days.
So if we have a listener in the Dominican Republic, how can they find the seesaw? What is the location?
It was in Duverhey, Dominican Republic. It was a while back, and now I'm guessing it's probably not there. So. Okay.
So just look for fragments of a dilapidated, shards of wood.
If you were injured by it, it was not my fault. Yes. It was two kids out there just trying to, you know, bring joy to some kids. So,
two kids.
Yeah, I was in high school at the time.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, we were working at a mission that was a daycare.
And they just said, here, take some tools. Go build this.
No, it wasn't tools. It was just like wood and a couple rocks. And we kind of like, you know.
This is like some kind of Flintstone thing.
It was like a Flintstone thing. But it worked for a couple minutes.
You tried it out.
We did try it out, yes.
Okay,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So we...
Okay, well, I'm going to cut you some slack since you were not... given tools to make a
oh yeah this diesel. Is very yeah
so. Thank goodness they didn't ask you to make monkey bars.
Yes. Ooh, that would
here
happen.
Yeah. here's a bunch of bamboo.
Yeah, so you know? But yeah, so seesaw okay. is right. in my heart then. Seesaw, merry-go-round, jungle gym, swing.
I understand the why it did not make your list. There's you've got some serious seesaw guilt.
You have
this deep secret seesaw aversion.
That's probably why,
because you know that there are kids out there that multiple leg injuries.
No, I don't think it was like that. I don't think it even worked that long for them to get injuries. So
even better. Okay.
All right. I think we're ready to wrap it up. If you want to grab our capsule, we can
let's do it. Let's end this.
All right. There we go. Great episode with Denzel and playground equipment. And we are okay. You got it?
Okay.
And don't forget to join us at crispycoatedrobots.com. That's where you can find out all about the show. We have all our back shows there. Find out what we've talked about these last 50 episodes. And also we have our album reviews. You can find out what albums we listened to and talked about. And merch. George's picture is on a sock. Can you believe that?
Right next to Jim.
Yes.
You always point out that I'm on the sock. But I'm standing right there next to my podcast buddy.
But we do have merch there too. So there you go.
There's a shirt out there. I saw the site the other day. It's like listed for $400 or something.
Really?
I don't know why.
Our shirt is listed for $400.
There's a shirt that's out there that is ridiculous. It actually says it's ridiculously overpriced. That's the selling point.
Wow.
Is
you want to be the person to buy that shirt.
I wish I could be the person.
You want to make that claim.
I wish I could.
Yeah. I bought this shirt for $400.
That's right. Impress your neighbors and your family, friends.
All right.
So and it's just a regular shirt. I don't know that it's not like it's bulletproof or anything.
All right. Well, let's shoot up this information and dig this in the ground.
Let's get this done.
All right, so go ahead,
George. Let us know if you buy that shirt.
With your final your final line there.
Remember, there's always tomorrow.
And the King Kong ain't got nothing on me!
Oh, and or is there? Sorry.